The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
The Colorado River is facing an imminent threat. The federal government is declaring a water shortage at the nation's largest reservoir for the first time in history.
The U.S. is rushing to increase the number of people it can evacuate from Afghanistan ahead of the August 31st withdrawal deadline.
We predict that our best effort could look like 5,000 to 9,000 passengers departing per day.
Mark is turning their attention next week to the Fed's annual meeting in Jackson Hole. Does Powell signal September as the time for the taper?
We've gone with 200 days without a 5% correction. This is a very challenging time of the year, late August, September. I think there's going to be some sticker shock that is coming up in September. Then there's the mask controversy and the Delta. But I think there's an accumulation of negative factors that we really might see a 5 to 10% correction in the next 2 to 5 weeks.
Tesla is planning a high-tech solution to dangerous and boring work. CEO Elon Musk on Thursday unveiled plans to build a Tesla bot. Speaking at the company's AI Day event, the billionaire entrepreneur said his company already had the key ingredients to make a humanoid robot.
If you think about what we're doing right now with the cars, Tesla is arguably the world's biggest robotics company because our cars are semi-sentient robots on wheels.
Musk said TeslaBot was being designed with an AI system, allowing it to perform a wide range of tasks, from attaching a bolt to a car to doing the grocery shopping.
Call it a $50 million mystery. Data analytics company Palantir buying more than $50 million worth of, get this, gold bars in August.
Notice they didn't buy the gold ETF. They bought actual physical
bars.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
This is them saying, you know what, central banks are out of control, black swan event, good for them. And my sense is you're going to see more of that and maybe them dip their toe into crypto as well.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
The major indices rallied on Friday, but were unable to close positive for the week. Delta virus lockdowns, a possible tapering by the Fed, and an ongoing sell-off in China's largest tech stocks were just some of the items driving this week's volatility. Hi everyone, I'm Chris Sheridan, and welcome to this week's Financial Sense News Hour. Coming up on today's podcast, technician Ron William out of Hong Kong lays out a cautious outlook on the stock market based on his technical work. Then Greg Weldon joins us to talk about some interesting developments with the potential for gas shortages again and a big play that he's gearing up for in the agricultural commodity complex. So you'll definitely want to hear what he has to say. But first, let's move over to Ryan Poplava for this week's market wrap-up.
Well, this week was interesting. The main bearish drivers in the beginning of the week were weak economic data points from China Monday and from the U.S. on Tuesday and Wednesday. These data points coupled with the FOMC's minutes sent stocks lower in the first half of the week. But time and time again, the S&P 500 found some buyers at the 50-day moving average and reversed the week opening on Thursday to finish better in the later half of the week. So let's focus in on these drivers. We saw angst in economic data that started last Friday with the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey dropping considerably. On Monday, China reported under consensus on retail sales, fixed asset investment, and industrial production data for July. Monday at the same time, our Empire Manufacturing Survey for August came in weaker as well at 18.3 versus 43 in July. So we're just starting to get these August surveys. U.S. retail sales were down 1.1% month over month in July, following a 0.7% increase in June. Excluding autos, retails also declined 0.4%. Food and drinking places were the exception in the report, with sales up 1.7%. The other data point in focus was the total housing starts decline of 7% month over month, while building permits increased 2.6% month over month. The consensus on these reports is that buyers and builders are a bit hesitant to move on higher cost of materials, land, and labor at this time. The minutes from the last Federal Open Market Committee's meeting were released on Wednesday. The minutes indicated several Fed members thought tapering should begin later this year. Where have we heard that before? The negative reaction in stocks was a bit odd because we've been hearing the Fed voters and non-voters speak loudly and clear on this subject last week, so it wasn't quite new news. But again, with weaker economic data this week, that all seemed to feed into each other. Also news that the U.S. will recommend a third booster shot 8 months after the second shot hit as well that seemed to bother investors. Those were some of the key drivers for the weakness in the early half of the week, weaker economic data, and the FOMC minutes. Also, Goldman Sachs cut its third quarter GDP forecast to 5.5% from 9%, but that didn't seem to really move the market much on that news alone. It's been almost mechanical, like I said, now to see stock indices rise off the 50-day moving averages. The technical bounce took place on Thursday intraday just above the 50-day moving average. Bloomberg had reported on Monday that the S&P 500 hasn't had a 5% pullback in nearly 200 days and that roughly 56% of all recommendations on the S&P 500 stocks have the equivalent of buy recommendations, which is the most bullish analysts have been since 2002. Could be a contrarian signal. Who knows? The biggest bounce on Thursday was happening in the mega caps. The S&P 500 was up 0.2% after being down 0.7% while decliners were leading advancers 2-1 on the NYSE and the NASDAQ. The technical bounce was also helped by great earnings news from NVIDIA and Cisco. The report actually from Cisco wasn't all that impressive with inline reports on earnings and guidance. Revenues were actually did beat consensus. And the July quarter marked the highest product order growth for the company in over a decade. And Friday, with Applied Materials providing a great earnings report and guided numbers higher for the quarter, and Microsoft announcing a 9-25% increase in pricing of its Microsoft 365 products, that was a happy addition to end the week for semis and tech overall, and again, especially in those mega cap stocks. Besides the economic FOMC minutes, the technical bounce and favorable earnings and announcements in technology, the other big story this week was the breakout in the U.S. dollar technically, and that was really based on the FOMC minutes, and the result it had on commodities was, again, a very big story. Rounding off here, copper was down 8%, and West Texas Intermediate crude was down 9% for the week, the last I checked around a little after lunch on Friday. And the consensus view is that weakening economic growth due to COVID, maybe not necessarily seeing shutdowns here in the U.S. on businesses, but you know, possibly seeing the consumer retract here a little bit. And the FOMC targeting tapering sooner than later were two culprits for the weakness in commodities. That wraps up the week. Jim will be popping in here for the technician this week, but doesn't plan to be back until after Labor Day for his usual summer break with an important announcement. Next up, Jim, with the technician, Ron William, this week.
So a security token is a security that's registered with the SEC that is linked to something. It could be income, it could be earnings, it could be equity, it could be cash flows in the future. It trades on the blockchain 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. When you trade from 9:30 in the morning till 4 p.m., that's only about 1/5 of the time that you'd be able to trade if it was a digital security, because we've got all these extra days in for weekends and all these nights. And that's pretty significant. Now, let's say you're in India or you're in China or you're in Japan and you want to trade U.S. securities. For right now, you got to wake up in the U.S. time zone to do your trades. Well, how about if you could trade these securities in your time zone? You could trade them using a cryptocurrency as payment, and you could take fractional ownership. You know, let's say as an example, you know, in the U.S., the average equity share price is something like $14 or $18. Well, let's say you're in India and you only make $18 a month, but you still want to have a portfolio of U.S. stocks. Well, how nice would it be if you could do fractional ownership and then everyone all around the world in their time zone and their wealth zone would be able to purchase a security?
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
If you're seeking financial advice and how to invest in today's markets, Financial Sense Wealth Management can help. From setting up or providing advice on 401k plans, managing corporate cash balances in a zero interest rate environment, to helping individuals, foundations, and businesses achieve their financial goals. Financial Sense Wealth Management has been named as one of the top investment advisory firms in the U.S. by the Financial Times. Let us put our financial expertise to work for you. Call now at 888-486-3939 or email grow@financialsense.com.
Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Well, we've got the stock market a little bit mixed, heading towards their 50-day moving averages of the major indexes. Interest rates, despite rising inflation, are at record lows, and commodity prices have been pulling back. What's going on in this market and where do we go going forward? Let's find out. Joining us on the program is Ron William. He's founder and market strategist with RW Advisor. Ron, let's begin with the major indexes. You've got the NASDAQ hugging its 50-day. You've got the Dow hugging its 50-day. It looks like the S&P is a little bit stronger. But let's begin with the top with the major indexes. What's your view here?
Yes, so we continue to trade the trend, but be very aware of signs of reversal. And that is truly the case right now with momentum exhaustion signals, sentiment at all-time extremes, both in terms of greed and fear. If you look at the options, positioning and cash being really trash on the retail side and even on institutional readings. And then if we look at the actual equity markets, particularly in the West, and you mentioned NASDAQ, S&P 500, the Dow, they are hugging their 50-day moving average. We use the 20, the 50, and the 200 days as a multi-time frame work to not just map out the trends, but the cycles of the trends. And we really see this as the line in the sand. It's a wait and see mode. The one thing I would add from a timing element is the negative seasonality, which is traditionally expected next month, September into October. The worst of the move is actually traditionally September, not October. But we remember October because that is the anniversary month of a full crash cycle, which we haven't had in a very long time right now. Not even a 5% correction. So I would suggest that everyone be prudent, risk averse, and be aware of any kind of fragility downside risk in the coming weeks and months.
As you take a look at all of this and what's going on in the market, what is the biggest correction we've had this year? 3-4%? I mean, when was the last time? I can't remember we had a 10% correction unless you went back to February of last year.
Well, exactly that. And I recall when we last spoke, Jim, it was that open question at the new year. Is this a Minsky risk? That was my big call from last year. So from 2020, where it did get frothy, especially in the tech sector. But then since then, we've had meme stocks, which, I mean, everyone knows in terms of how crazy that got, the so-called rock and roll investing, where people were making triple digit percentage gains, not single or double. And then, of course, we had crypto space go crazy, and I'm long-term bull, but it was a great greed indicator. And then we had the consequential crash that took place. So all of this hot money trade, FOMO is at extreme record highs, if you look at it based on sentiment data on Google Trends. It's a real kind of vibrant and irrational market right now. But I think at some point, in recent times, we have seen growth indicators wane a little bit. Our long-term business cycle roadmap has been in a peaking stage for some time. Interesting, we're getting more of a lead signal from the Asia markets here, where I am in Hong Kong. The China and the Hang Seng have already broken down through structural levels. And so potentially canary in the coal mine there, coming from east to west.
Let's look at the S&P sectors. So you have consumer staples holding up. You've got healthcare holding up. You have utilities holding up. These are traditionally associated kind of with a more conservative safety trade. But yet you still have other sectors that are doing well. So what's your take with the sectors within the S&P?
It's been non-traditional. And we have seen some kind of late bloomers play catch up and actually hold the market up. But it's not fitting within the usual and expected rotation in markets. I based on our global roadmap, which focuses on a top-down focus, I mean, so beginning with global cross assets and then on the index level sectors and then stocks, what we're seeing is economic sensitive markets such as in the commodities area, oil and copper falling from grace. So you can see that more specifically on sectors. And some of the Western equity markets actually starting to lose some momentum and produce some exhaustion signals. So we're in a mean reversion territory right now, and we're evaluating downside risk in the second half this year, and particularly September, October.
You know, it's really surprising. Let's talk about interest rates here. As inflation has heated up and moved much higher, surprisingly, bond yields have come down.
Yes. And what's interesting is you know, that's the divergent signal compared with the U.S. equity market. So risk on equities, risk off fixed income. And so which one is telling the truth? And so for now, we see yields holding ground and potentially kind of giving a warning signal that markets are priced to perfection. Also, there are event risks which are now overlaying, such as COVID 2.0 with the variant and the reopening trade potentially kind of going into closure mode. So all of this, you know, ongoing wall of worry is now starting to actually weigh on the market for the first time in a long time. And we can see that in the growth numbers. And we can interestingly even see it as part of the inflation trade actually dissipating. So if you look at Bank of America sentiment gauge, that is showing some unwind, looking at 5-year break even. That also failed at a key structural level at 2.5. And then we can see that across the commodity markets. And just to be clear, that's underlying inflation and inflation sentiment market and investor. If we talk about cost of living, that's at extraordinary rates as of, I think, last month.
Yeah, because if you look at falling bond yields and falling commodity prices as part of the inflation trade, and then you look at rising stock prices, one of these markets has this thing wrong. But, you know, Ron, when you look at this and just looking fundamentally, it seems to me it would be very hard to be bearish. The Biden administration's budget for 2022 is $6 trillion. They're talking about adding another $6.5 trillion on top of that. So that would be 12 to 13 trillion of stimulus. The Fed's still going to be printing money. Can you get really bearish when the government is throwing that kind of money?
Yeah, so that's been the big question across interdisciplines in our industry, whether it's the technical analysis community or fundamental macro. Can money printing and MMT last forever? Our view from a market perspective is no. That's what history has taught us many times before. But having said that, it's so difficult to actually make that trade and make that call when the market is exuberant and it's pushing to new record highs on a regular basis. So trade what you see, trends up, trade it up. There needs to be some kind of risk averse or risk management or even diversification play just in case, a hedge of sorts for when the party ends and we get a reset in a cycle. Just to be clear on our cycle work, so we're looking for a global cycle reset from basically 2020 into 2023. So a 2 to 3 year traditional bear market shakeout. With ebbs and flows along the way, but that's been our roadmap for some time and continues to be. We think that will likely begin into year end and be more marked over the next in 2022, 2023. So that's our view, and in the end, we'll see which side of the equation wins out. But I think if we all watch the markets closely and look for some of those internal signals. It's not as clear as it may seem on face value.
You know, one of the negatives in all the stimulus would be raising the capital gains rate to 44% if you make a certain level of income. Ron, what do you think the masters of the universe, I'm talking about the big players on Wall Street that are, you know, either have billion dollar portfolios themselves or managing that, what do you think these guys are going to do if they know next year capital gains could go to 44%?
One of the biggest pain trades in town. And it'll be a big shock on a societal level and on a market side. And these are many of the black swan events that we look out for and that the market maybe is already starting to price in.
You know, it was interesting on the day you were talking AI company, their treasurer announced for the first time they're putting $50 million into gold, and they're also buying cryptocurrencies. This is a big tech company because they mentioned exactly what you just said. They're expecting a black swan event, and they're hedging with gold and crypto.
Yeah, so we've had this back and forth rotation between gold and crypto. And my recommendation to clients is B-O-L-D, be bold, and trade both. But of course, it was difficult to do that post-crash crypto. And with 5,000 plus crypto coins, it's going to be a game of survival. So an ugly Darwinian evolution. And some will live and some won't. But in the end, if we pick the best of the best of the coins and be careful with the selection process, add it to gold, which continues to be our friend in terms of that strong trend on a multi-year basis, it's the relative or the best trade in a worst-case situation. And one thing I would like to add to that is just add to the Minsky risk theme, are words from the Austrian economist Ludwig von Mises, wonderful quote, which I think would be poignant at this moment in time. There is no means of avoiding the financial collapse, which we believe is going to be in the next 2-3 years, of a boom brought about by credit expansion. The question is only whether the crisis should come sooner as a result of two things. One, a voluntary abandonment of further credit expansion, which hopefully circles back to your earlier question. Or two, later, as a final and total catastrophe of the currency system involved. And that continues to be our view, certainly on the dollar index.
So as you look at this market as a technician and from your cycle work, what would be the key things that we tip you off that we're heading into this bear market? What would you be looking for specifically, and what should our listeners be alert to?
So right at long-term, this reset period and the asymmetric risk remains. Having said that, it's really important to trade what you see, trend up, trade it up. But just be very astute on the risk management side, on the diversification play, and maybe consider some hedges. The second thing we would suggest is to look at the sentiment indicators to get an idea of when the crowd is truly on the wrong side of this. And there's a whole range of indicators to look at, but you know, try and look at a composite mix just to get a true measure. And then lastly, we would just say, go back to the markets. The big risk trades would be, if I was to highlight a few, S&P 500 as a case in point. And we already have a DeMarc exhaustion signal on there, and we're watching the line in the sand at 50-day moving average. And that 50-day moving average is interesting, not just for the US markets. It's for Europe and the UK. Also look at intermarket equity market performance from east to west. Again, as I just mentioned, here in Asia, some of the markets are already breaking down and are starting to show up in the economic figures. And then lastly, pay attention to volatility regimes changing from extreme record lows, complacency, back to what we saw, in normal markets or in abnormal markets, which is very similar, which would be a mean reversion or a crash situation. And then the very last point I'd mention is currencies. So the dollar index would be key, likely to be strong in the short term if there was a safe haven flow return. But 89.90 on the dollar index is going to be an important make or break level for the currency.
And this kind of financial unwinding that you see over the next couple of years, are you talking about a mama, a papa bear market?
In all honesty, it's the biggest of the two. But we always gauge these events on a step-by-step basis, because no one event happens the same way. But the market rhyme is what we see throughout the behavior of markets. And so, I mean, the average bear is a minimum of 30% to 50%. And it's not just the price magnitude, Jim, it's also time. markets take time to repair from a shakeout period. And we had a record repair in that V-shaped recovery we saw last year. And that's great. And that's been the V-shaped reversal, FOMO-led rally, central bank liquidity that we've all been partying in. But the true bear, I think, is yet to show its face. We're still trading the markets that make us money, but we're closing out on the party trade early and not late, just because we think that the risks are too great. So look at the price and the time magnitude as a true measure of a bear market.
You know, one of the things that really strikes me, Ron, I'd love to get your view on this. The Fed tried to raise interest rates. I think they got as high as 2.5%, and they brought it back down to zero, and we weren't even in a recession yet. They launched QE infinity at the rate that they're printing. If they're at zero interest rates now, what are they going to do in the next downturn?
Less firepower and more room for a central bank mistake. And that goes back to the Austrian economic quote that I mentioned. It's one of the two. Either central banks basically run out of ammo, misstep, or markets start to just vote with their feet, as the old saying goes. And of course, that could be risk markets like the equity markets. Could be most likely also the currencies eventually with that debasement risk. And then, of course, a flight to safety into gold or crypto.
All right. Well, listen, Ron, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow the work that you do, how could they do so?
Yes. So by all means, follow us on RW Advisory and social media. We're happy to share complimentary trials. And you know, we're always active on shows like this. So watch out for our work.
All right. Well, listen, Ron, thanks so much for joining us on the program. Have yourself a great weekend.
FS Insider caught up with Peter Zeihan, the noted geopolitical strategist and author of numerous must-read books, to get his thoughts on the situation in Afghanistan and some of the narratives that are floating out of Russia and China on what this implies for America's relationship with other allies. Here's a clip of what he had to tell listeners this week on FS Insider.
You got to remember why we were there in the first place. 9/11 happened. We had a manhunt that led us to Afghanistan. And eventually, as part of the operations there, we got the people who were responsible, Al-Qaeda. And then the question was, what's next? We have been in Afghanistan for the last 20 years to try to establish a domestic capacity in that place that can prevent groups like Al-Qaeda from forming again. And I don't mean to suggest that that's a pointless battle, but you've got to wonder if that's the right spot. There are 20 countries that I can think of offhand that have active militant groups that were more capable than Al-Qaeda ended up being in its final years. And if you're going to invade and occupy Afghanistan in order to prevent a militant group from forming there, you got to ask yourself why there and not in other places where there actually are already militant groups in existence that hate the United States. So we ended up with a 20-year war with thousands of American deaths for the prevention of a maybe, as opposed to going into countries that would be easier to reach where you would have immediate payback. And in that environment, it was a recipe for a true forever war.
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
Don't let higher inflation erode the value of your hard-earned wealth. Let us put our financial expertise to work for you. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management today at 888-486-3939 or email us at grow@financialsense.com. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Joining us on the show today is Greg Weldon at WeldonOnline.com. And Greg, you recently did an extensive review looking at the state of the U.S. consumer. And as you know, last week we saw a huge plunge in consumer sentiment back to levels we haven't seen since 2011. This is important, of course, because consumer spending now drives a whopping 70% of the U.S. economy. And so if consumers sour on their outlook and a pullback on spending takes place, that means we are likely looking at a slowdown. So what is your assessment of this recent drop? Is this just a one-off reaction to the most recent surge in COVID cases, as many headlines suggest? Or in your view, is this the beginning of something more sustained?
I think it's a bigger picture tell. So I think it actually goes hand in hand with some signs, albeit early stage and somewhat peripheral, that the housing market's slowing down as well. I take the consumer and I look back at where we were 6 months ago when I was the one pounding the table on these consumer stocks have priced in the most rosy possible scenario for rebounding consumer demand, which we likely get in some kind of release of tension way. You hold the beach ball below the level of the surface of the pool for long enough, you let go, it explodes through. That's the rebound that we got, you know, in the summer. Delta, Lambda, Theta Chi, whatever, is kind of, you know, slows it down. But I sense a couple of things. Number one, fatigue over this whole COVID. Number two, you know, you still have the level of disbelief. Number three, the fact that it's the most polarizing thing on the planet right now and in this country, that's reflected by the simple, simple fact that 50.2% is the fully vaccinated ratio. So you can't get it any more polarized than that. The point here in bigger picture terms is, does this thing continue to linger as a headwind? And if not, is what's priced into the market realistic in terms of the economic growth with a consumer that's wounded to some degree? I mean, you know, there's a lot of consumers that are not wounded. So again, it's polarized. I think that's maybe that's the way I should have led with this, because the most important thing is that polarization applies to people. And you see that in the Fed's, the New York Fed's survey of households specifically, where you see the people under, you know, the bottom half of the income range are the ones that are hurting, the ones that see the highest prices for inflation, that feel the impact the most, that are borrowed. You know, they've gone on a borrowing feeding frenzy. The numbers for May and June, it's lagged a month, the Fed's consumer credit numbers, were record. Both of them were records, and back to back a record and quarterly a record and, you know, the whole nine yards. All right. So when you look at that fueling, you know, being fueled by paper money that the Fed has printed, again, the question is, if the paper money runs out and you have a consumer now that's full, that you have a whole layer of the labor market that's still basically been decimated, is maybe never coming back, millions of jobs. And you have the lower half of the income scale, which, of course, ties into the lower half of the educational attainment scale. All right. Which, of course, is what the Fed's mandate here is for employment. Why? Because they're trying to be, you know, distribute money more equally, which means, you know, trying to give that lower half of the income scale a stepladder to reach a higher level. But that is really difficult in terms of these kinds of policies. And to think that that's going to work and the expectations in the stock market are going to be met, I think, is problematic, number one. And number two, the problem with that conclusion is trillions of dollars that are still floating around out there buying anything. So, again, polarized, man. Everything is polarized right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you can even see that, you know, when you look, you drill down into the various numbers, whether it's consumer spending or whatnot. I mean, big separation between Republicans and Democrats on their outlook. So, you know, it's just funny to see the level of polarization when you drill into the economic data and all the sentiment numbers as well. You know, one thing that we've been looking at that's giving us a bit more caution currently is the a potential peak in liquidity. We're seeing a peak in growth rates of liquidity here in the U.S. It looks like we're seeing a flat line in global liquidity, and this could spell trouble ahead for the markets. We've been raising some cash here and, you know, just having some dry powder in case we do see a correction or at least some greater volatility going forward. What is your view on the liquidity outlook currently?
I think that's a great point, great observation. I think that we've been talking about that in the same vein as the consumer for a couple of months here. And let me propose something to you, because you have a peak in liquidity at a time when, if you look at the latest budget numbers that just came out for July, okay, public borrowing in a 36-month span, if you project it out to what the CBO and what is in these numbers, all right, combined with what we've already added, and this is only since last year, okay, 36-month period, public borrowing would be exceed $9 trillion through the end of fiscal 2022. All right. When you have the Fed about to step back from the bond market, you're going to pump out $9 trillion of public borrowing in a 36-month period. Some of it's been done already, but most of which hasn't. That's problematic from the liquidity standpoint. Number one, you send interest rates kind of back to where inflation is right now. And of course, inflation transitory. The year over year rate of inflation might be transitory, but people can be paying higher prices for stuff no matter what. So, and if you time that with the political situation, which I really hate to talk about, but it's not really, you know, partisan politics at this point. It's the fact that you have a mess in Afghanistan. You have China already, the planning has already started. It started months ago. I was talking about this. The Chinese planning to build roads through Afghanistan, through Pakistan, that will connect China to their, you know, resource areas as far away as Africa and the Middle East. These are the things the Chinese are thinking about. And when they see the weakness here that's been displayed by the U.S., not only as it relates to Afghanistan, but also, and maybe even as importantly, the weakness related to energy. And the weakness in the sense that Biden dissed kind of the younger generation of the Saudi Arabian royal family, the guys who basically run Saudi Aramco, in his second week of office. And now he's on the tape all but begging OPEC to produce more oil because gasoline prices are rising. Well, guess what? When you disinvest from petroleum companies, all right, and you haven't built a refinery in this country for God knows how many decades, all right, and you don't, these companies now indebted with low share prices, not a lot of liquidity, to cycle back to your liquidity question. Well, of course, refinery maintenance is really expensive, man. And if it's not done, you're going to have shortages. You could see gas prices double digits in California, let alone the drought we have, let alone that Lake Mead, you're talking about Lake Powell, you're talking about the lowest levels in the Colorado River system, you know, ever, 40% of capacity. They just started rationing Lake Mead literally yesterday or today. I don't know exactly when that took place. But this hasn't ever happened before. You're talking about 18% of Arizona's water supply just disappeared. All right. You have one of the worst droughts in terms of the landmass categorized as under drought in history. All right. I mean, oh, my God, you have a situation where there was no action on any of these things. And I get back to Afghanistan. I get back to China and I get back to Taiwan. Because we know they have been messing around in the South China Sea ever since Biden took office. They've messed with the Philippine Navy. They have messed with the Malaysian, Taiwanese airspace. I mean, there's a lot going on there. And I think when the U.S. looks weak in Afghanistan, this is going to be the efficiency of the U.S. military, you know, operation these days under Joe Biden. Man, you don't think China's chomping at the bit to jump all over this kind of stuff, you know, let alone make a move on the dollar where they, you know, in cahoots with Saudi Arabia and Russia, you know, a benchmark crude oil priced in renminbi based on the Shanghai Futures Exchange. I mean, there's a lot could happen here, man. So when you want to talk about liquidity peaking at a time when really everything else is intensifying. Now, the problem is, and you mentioned before, not to make a long answer longer, but it really is a good answer if you tie it all back together to the perpetual need for this liquidity, which you mentioned before. It's like it is a mathematical conundrum now because each next wave of deflation, you have to print so much more money to get the same bang for your buck. Are we at the point where it doesn't work the next time? That's the big question. I don't know, but this is what gets me up every morning at 2 o'clock in the morning, all excited to sit at my desk for 18 hours a day.
Yeah. You just have to be printing bigger and bigger amounts. I mean, obviously we saw that with the COVID crash. I mean, we just saw an insane amount of monetary printing, fiscal stimulus, just to try to stave off worst case scenario. So if we do really start to see a big retrenchment in consumer spending, again, 70% of the U.S. economy is now based on personal consumer expenditures, based on the consumer. So that's a massive part. If we see a pullback in spending, which consumer sentiment this last week, big plunge back to 2011 levels. If that is something that is sustained, if this is more cyclical and not just a one-off reaction to the recent Delta surge, then that does signal that there's probably a slowdown ahead. And I think that from the overall assessment from people that we've been speaking with on our show and the data that we're looking at here, and tell me if you disagree or not, but we are looking at a 2022 slowdown, and it's likely not to result in a recession, a double dip recession, unless we see some type of major exogenous event, of course, but 2022 slowdown is baked in the cake now at this point. And the big question is just how fast the Fed is going to be moving on the liquidity side of things with tapering, if that's going to be taking place, you know, earlier than expected, if that's going to be a 2022 story and what the impacts on the market are going to be. Those are some of the big unknowns that, of course, we're watching.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in terms of the consumer, again, I think it's a bifurcated consumer. So that's, you know, you're going to have a situation, I think, where the economy is even stronger without the support of liquidity, you know, assuming that that money has been absorbed. And the Fed has actually done a lot of studies on what consumers actually expected to spend versus save versus use to pay down debt. And most of the data shows that that's largely true. But the data also shows that consumers borrowed a lot at that time frame, too. So, you know, they've started increasing their debt again, which, of course, is both good and not so good, depending on, you know, how you want to look at it longer term. But again, I think that one of the things we kind of tend to forget is before COVID, really, fourth quarter 2018, you saw the rollover, all right? You saw numbers in Germany all of a sudden sour. You saw the numbers in the U.S. were headed south kind of, you know, even into the fourth quarter of 2019. So COVID accelerated, in my mind, something that was kind of already on the table. The question is, have we worked through that yet, even given COVID? And I'm not sure the answer is yes, because you've lost a lot of growth. They talk about employment. Well, we need to get, you know, the Fed's talking, well, another 900,000 and we can start tapering and so on and so forth. But guess what? Of course, they're going to taper. And of course, at first, the market's not going to mind until you got $9 trillion of public borrowing to be done. Then the market's going to mind. And then you're going to have a problem. And then the public's going to mind. Then the Fed's going to have to do something again. So you can create a scenario where this all does kind of play out by the end of 2022 when the Fed is thought to begin to start to think about hiking. Maybe it's hiked once. Maybe it's first quarter. Maybe it's second half of 2023. The pricing's all over the place. But, I mean, you could make a solid case, and somebody's brought this up the other day, and I don't disagree with this. I don't think this is the top probability case, but it's a pretty good one, that the Fed never gets to the point where they raise rates.
The Fed hasn't even admitted that in prior papers, that we're probably looking at protracted rates and bouts of being at the zero bound. So, you know, we could say that it could just be a matter of tapering, big market reaction, and then they don't raise rates, or it just takes a really long time. So that, yeah, that's definitely something to be mindful of as a potential outcome. I agree. So it sounds like, you know, you are viewing this recent plunge in consumer sentiment by the University of Michigan survey as something that is more than just a one-off event. It's probably a bigger tell here on inflation, as you said, you know, transitory and really high year-over-year terms, but we're likely looking at something that's a bit more longer lasting here. That's what we're positioned for, higher than average structural increase in inflation longer term. How does this relate to the commodity outlook? Because, you know, we saw a big surge in commodities off of the 2020 bottom. A lot of investors rushed into commodities. Some people are saying, you know, there's still a very good long-term case here for the commodity sector. Obviously, we've seen some weakening more recently in copper and other areas. Gold and silver got hit pretty hard last week, I believe it was. So what's your take on the overall commodity outlook?
Well, posed the question very well. I mean, it really is a sector by sector thing right now. And a lot of that has to do with the rebound in the dollar. You actually have the gold adjusted value of the dollar just made a significant technical breakout to the upside. This is a function of the fact that, you know, we're in a lot better shape than a lot of other places. When you look at Europe and when you look at Japan in particular, and you have, you know, two out of the three central banks, being the ECB and the BOJ, basically just told us they could ease again. So, you know, from a rate differential perspective, which a lot of times is a major driving force in the currency markets, you know, the dollar rate premium has been expanding and, you know, expect that to continue. That lifts the dollar. And frankly, I don't think Powell has a problem with that now, because in the past that probably would have provided some kind of issue for the Fed had it been a sign of weakness in emerging markets where maybe there's a deflationary whiff coming from that. Right now, the Fed wouldn't mind a little currency disinflationary, you know, against the tide push that might soften this inflation, which I think I think this is a higher, a more rapid increase to rates that they didn't expect to see. So, and of course, we said you could see rates, you know, four up to a five handle in CPI, you know, but I have to say, I mean, we didn't expect to happen that quickly. All right, because it's so broad based and it is so embedded, like you said before. In terms of the commodities, the ones that are more sensitive to the dollar, the ones that are kind of slowing down or rolling over even, are gold and silver. I don't want to say gold and silver are vulnerable here, but you might get cheaper prices to make a later dated purchase. All right, let's put it that way. You know, I think longer term gold and silver are fine because the ultimate game is still going to be dollar depreciation, you know, on the next wave, whenever that comes. But that could be an interim of time here, and that could be bad for the gold bulls. I would say that base metals are both ways. I mean, base metals are kind of the bastard child of commodities because they have this dollar weight on it, but they have great fundamentals, and particularly tin and nickel. All right, to a lesser degree, copper. I mean, even aluminum, which had been the black sheep all of a sudden in the base metal complex, has performed very well, looking to break out. Zinc as well. So I think base metals have a longer term positives, also have some dollar risk, although I think not as deep a risk as do the precious metals. I love the agricultural commodities. I just love them. I mean, they're rallying on, you know, autonomous, bullish supply-demand fundamentals. Long-term in nature, major declines in ending stocks of a variety of commodities to where, you know, stocks to usage ratios are back to lower levels. And they have rallied in the face of a dollar that might have kept them at bay. Part of the reason is they've underperformed. So they have some room, you know, relative to where the CRB has moved against the dollar. But I think you have a lot of bullish cases. Just did an ag special yesterday, 60 pages. Just ripped apart the USDA's crop report from last Thursday afternoon. It was a fascinating report, a lot of changes and a lot of things you don't normally see the USDA do. I mean, it was really crazy, some of the things that the USDA did in this report. I'd love to give it to any of your listeners, you know, just to come find us on our website, and we'll be happy to give you that report. I don't want to give away the, you know, give away the end surprise on what the real significant positions are in some of the food / agricultural soft tropical commodities. That I think are the next big wave bull markets in the commodity sector.
Well, Greg, with that said, as we close, would you mind telling our listeners the best way to get their hands on your excellent research?
Sure. You can come to the website, weldononline.com, and sign up for a free trial if you've never had one before. If you want to get the special, you could email us at sales@weldononline.com, and we'll set you up with that. And you know, I would have mentioned also that, you know, we do run a CTA, and we are not always open to fresh money, but right now I think the opportunity in these commodities specifically, and then in bond markets coming up too, in terms of, you know, rising interest rates, and maybe even against the grain of what central banks want, I think there's great wealth creating opportunities out there in the next 24 to 36 months. So we love to entertain any qualified investors that might be interested in our programs.
Thank you again for coming on our podcast. We look forward to speaking with you in the future. That concludes our weekend edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. To speak with our financial planning and wealth management team, give us a call at 888-486-3939, or go to financialsense.com and click where it says Contact Us. If you aren't already a subscriber to our weekday podcast and would like to listen to more of our content, where we regularly interview book authors, industry experts, and strategists from around the globe, go to Financial Sense and hit the subscribe button. On behalf of Financial Sense News Hour and the Financial Sense Wealth Management team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.